And we move on to the third case of the morning, which is Robert Miles versus State of Indiana. Hey, Mr. Darst.
May it please the court. Robert Miles was only the fourth African American to ever be hired by the Indiana State Police as a state trooper. He was an excellent employee, and this was testified to by a couple of superiors, including the director of the personnel division. Robert Miles also assisted, in addition to being an excellent employee, assisted in recruiting other African Americans when the Indiana State Police had not hired many African Americans. Robert Miles also complained, and was one of the leaders in the complaint, about discrimination against African Americans when no African Americans were promoted above the position of sergeant. He was a named plaintiff in that case.
But let me stop you there, Mr. Darst, because one of the errors you said the district court committed was in denying his request for promotion from first sergeant to captain. And my question is, since he never applied for that intermediate position of lieutenant, even though he took the test, and promotions from lieutenant to captain are discretionary, how was it error for the court to deny that motion?
Thank you, Your Honor. That test was a test for a lieutenant's position, and there was no lieutenant's position above Bob Miles. Bob Miles held the position of commander of a section of the personnel division, and the person before him, the white person before him, had been a captain. The white person after him was a captain. He was a first sergeant. There was no lieutenant's position above that. There was no lieutenant slot. And so, yes, he took the test and passed the test, but it was futile because there was nothing for him to apply to. I think the state has said someplace, well, he could apply for lieutenant positions in other sections or other areas. Well, his section was the personnel section, or the personnel division, excuse me, personnel division. There was no lieutenant slot there. Furthermore,
Therefore, the district court would have been justified for the district court to skip that step into.
Right. Not only was it not necessary, it wasn't even relevant because the position wasn't there. Now, Bob, you know, did take the test and went through and passed it, but there's no reason for him to keep taking a test year after year when there's no position for a lieutenant. The position above that section commander's position was the captain's position. Now, even after the white employee, Dan Meek, after Bob Miles was placed in that position and promoted from sergeant to captain, no space in between, Dan Meek was evaluated by the commander of the personnel division as not as good as Bob Miles. So here is the white employee who was promoted to captain, didn't go through the position of lieutenant because there wasn't any position. The African-American was better, and yet the state keeps trying to argue, well, he didn't take this test, he didn't take this test. Well, there was no test for that position because there was no position there. And he did take the test and he passed it, so there wasn't any use for him to just keep going to a test year after year when there's no position for it.
It's the discretionary thing about captains, I don't exactly understand, but would he have been eligible to, I sort of describe this as a vertical promotion, that's why there wasn't a slot in personnel division or whatever he was in, so he couldn't go up vertically. But it's not, it just doesn't happen where you get promoted to lieutenant.
It happens that another section,
obliquely, I guess you'd say.
Pardon me?
Obliquely? I'm not
obliquely.
Sure. Obliquely.
It happens, but, you know, not in this division, not in the personnel division, there just wasn't a lieutenant slot. in that position. And the commander of that division testified that, yes, Bob should have been promoted. That position of he was the acting assistant commander of that division. For example, when the commander was gone, Bob took his place, sat in on meetings. As a matter of fact, he was in that meeting when the worst racial statement was made against an African-American trooper, that he then went back and reported to his supervisor, the commander of the personnel division. Now, Bob had been active in recruiting African-Americans. He had tried to get respect for African-Americans and state troopers, and had been active in training them. And then in the command meeting, this statement is made about comparing...
The statement was made about the subsequent superintendent who was there.
That's
right?
Correct. That's correct.
So this was what somebody labeled as a joke, I guess, to this person in his presence.
Yeah.
In fact, because I was curious why, what was his name, the superintendent?
Caraway.
Caraway apologized to Miles because I don't know what. He tolerated the joke or something. I'm not sure.
Right, exactly. And so Bob Miles was in charge of this very subject matter, the respect for African-American troopers, the respect for troopers in general, and for a white a major, a person of responsibility, wasn't even a line officer, a major to say, well, yeah, I was circumcised and they took my foreskin and made a black major, named him Caraway. I mean, that's a horrendous statement to compare a black major to the foreskin of a white major. And Bob Miles had been working for years to get equality and to get respect. And so he, what did he do? He reported that to his commander that he was substituting for, to his supervisor, which is exactly what he's supposed to do. His commander then said, his commander then reported to the EEO office, who then reported to the superintendent. So everyone was in agreement that this was inappropriate and should have been reported as race discrimination. It was just completely inappropriate. Now, Caraway took a different position, and he took a position that, well, he didn't complain, and he knew Bob Miles would complain because Bob had been working on this for many years. And so Caraway then said that was why he did not consider Bob to be loyal to Caraway. No question about him being loyal to the Indiana State Police. No question that they could work together, because they could work together. He just didn't want someone who complained about race discrimination. And all of the people up the chain of command verified that Bob was correct in complaining about this. But then it's improper for the superintendent to hold this against him and say, well, I'm not going to promote him. I would consider him loyal because, you know, he complained about race discrimination. I didn't. I had to apologize, and I told him it was none of his business, even though he was in the personnel division, and everyone else agreed that he should have reported that. And so that's the problem. Now, even after Dan Meek, maybe I could address Judge Williams' question some more. Even after Dan Meek was promoted from first sergeant to captain, there was another white officer.
Did Caraway appoint him?
Yes, and promoted the white from appointed the white from first sergeant to captain. As a matter of fact, Caraway testified that he promoted about a dozen whites from first sergeant to captain, which is about half of the captains appointed.
Because who else appoints them? I get the impression, and maybe I'm wrong, that the do these people serve at the pleasure of the superintendent?
Well,
are they more or less policy makers? And when they change superintendents, do these people get displaced?
No, these are not all policy makers, but he has those appointments, so he can appoint those.
Or his team, you might say.
Well,
I don't know. That's what
they're his about. They're his appointments.
Okay.
They're his appointments.
And so his superintendent would have the right to appoint someone else.
I don't know. There's no evidence on that.
Okay.
So I don't know if they go out normally and then the superintendent backfills that position through his appointment or not. But Mr. Miles was the lowest of the low on those appointments. He was just seeking the appointment to captain. But after Dan Meek, the white employee who was promoted from first sergeant to captain. Then there was another one, Parker, who was appointed from first sergeant to captain. And that was Mr. Parker. And so Bob Miles is the only one in that position who has been the acting assistant division commander of the personnel division who has not been promoted from first sergeant to captain. Superintendent Carraway also indicated that really they don't promote anyone who has a discrimination complaint pending. It's a terrible practice. They have promoted people after they have resolved their discrimination complaint. You know,
I want to ask you one thing before you go. That is on this issue of a retaliation. What you're asking for is that there be a retaliation policy put in place or no anti-retaliation.
Exactly.
And my question is not promoting him to captain labeled retaliation?
Oh, yes.
So if we were to put in, I guess, injunctive relief or something that said you cannot further retaliate, in effect what you're saying is you got to promote him to captain.
Well,
or not. Maybe
those are two separate issues.
I know, but what is the impact then of saying there'll be no more retaliation? Which is in a broad sense, of course, that sounds like a logical thing to say.
That he'd be able to be considered for promotion even above captain. He's an excellent employee.
I understand that. I just wondered what, as long as you're saying retaliation is not the equivalent of not promoting him to captain or something else.
It is something else because they need to stop retaliating against him. They need to stop saying, I will not consider him for any promotion because I don't think he's loyal because he complained about race discrimination. He should be able to be considered for promotions even above captain. He should be treated equally.
Okay.
I had one question about the attorney fees issue because as I understand it, what you're saying is if you prevail here in the Court of Appeals, you just want to preserve your right to get
exactly
fees when you go below.
Exactly.
Okay.
Thank you.
Ms. Barrow.
May it please the Court. The State of Indiana asked this Court to affirm the decision of the District Court rejecting Mr. Miles' request for equitable relief. The question is whether the District Court abused its discretion, and all the issues of this case are reviewed under that standard. The federal statute that controls sets out a deferential standard or wide authority for the District Court to fashion relief. It orders such affirmative action as may be appropriate.
Right, and we're familiar with the standard. So my question is, the court denied the request to promote him from first sergeant to captain. Why should he have to become a lieutenant when the positions are non-existent in the division that he wants to be in before he would be eligible? I mean, why wasn't that an abuse of discretion? And particularly when you had another man who was promoted to captain and he didn't take the test either.
It's because, as the District Court found, looking at the entire structure of officers in the Indiana State Police, there were only approximately 13 captains at any given time, but a total of 1,300 troopers. And so there are very few people even expect to become captain. And to leap over an intermediate rank is extremely unusual, and it's not something that a trooper should expect to be entitled to. Certainly.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
If he or she doesn't take the required test.
Well, what didn't he have, as I understand it, Miles had an extraordinary career. And that, you don't think, would make a difference. I mean, there's no dispute that he was outstanding, that he had done an outstanding job in every respect. I mean, everybody says that.
Yes, Your Honor. And there were two claims that the jury considered. One was race discrimination, and the other was retaliation. And so the jury considered all of the evidence regarding his performance and how well he performed and his reputation within the state police, as well as evidence of possible retaliation. and it only found for him on the retaliation claim. And I think it's significant that the verdict form that was given to the jury provided two separate bases for retaliation. One was the transfer to the records division, which was basically putting him in a dead-end job with no supervisory authority, or not promote him. And so what the district court found, further, the verdict form simply had a line to put in the amount of damages. It was not detailed at all as far as what the jury was thinking or determining. And so what the district court then, in fashioning equitable relief, decided, well, the jury could have determined that the retaliation consisted of the transfer to the records division. And that is within the discretion of the court to deem that that was the retaliatory act that was the basis of the jury's finding for the plaintiff on that claim. And accordingly, based on that particular determination, everything else followed. Because of that determination, then, there was no finding that Superintendent Carraway retaliated against the plaintiff. The only act that the plaintiff discusses that possibly could have been a basis for retaliation by the superintendent, by Carraway, was this meeting that would have been like 1994 or earlier, and Carraway wasn't even appointed the superintendent until 1997. So that was the only incident that Miles could think of that might have been the basis for Carraway wanting to retaliate and not promote him. And what Carraway testified about and what the district court found was that he was concerned that Miles talked about him behind his back, that he did not support his being appointed to be the superintendent, that he considered loyalty to be very important in individuals that he appointed to captain, that it's entirely discretionary who is appointed to captain. My understanding of those 13 or so captain's positions is that they're intended to cover the whole range of state police functions, so that all of the captains are, like they said, a sort of a cabinet for the superintendent.
And well, that goes to my question, Mr. Darst. Maybe it's not in the record, or maybe you don't know. I just am curious. Is that, in effect, what it is? Is with each new superintendent, does he have the authority to reappoint or to replace captains and majors?
I don't believe it's exactly parallel to, say, a new president appointing cabinet members. I think you expect some turnover. That, for example, when we talk about 13 captains in the record, those same individuals aren't captains today. Some of them are promoted to major and on, and others retire. I don't know the exact answer to the question, though, whether there's a wholesale replacement of higher officers when there's a new superintendent.
Well, I guess the follow-up to that is that obviously there had to be an opening. Either it's opening at the discretion of the superintendent, or there's an opening because somebody retired or got promoted themselves. Now, we're assuming all along here he didn't get promoted into an opening.
That is true. I think there was a specific opening that he thought he was entitled to. And instead, the district court found that the more appropriate relief was to put him in another first sergeant position where he would have supervisory authority. That was his specific complaint about the transfer to records. And what he's been in charge of now is he's in the crash records division, and he supervises a large number of individuals.
And maybe since we're talking about his current position, we should talk about the court's denial of his request for injunctive relief against future retaliation, because it seems to me that the statement that the chief made, that he would likely never consider Miles for promotion because he believed he couldn't regain his loyalty after Miles complained about the racial remark, certainly was sufficient evidence for the court to enter that injunctive relief. You want to speak to that point as to why that wasn't error?
Yes, Your Honor. What the district court stated was, having found that the retaliation consisted of the previous superintendent's putting him in a dead-end job, that with the new superintendent, he found that it wasn't likely for the circumstances didn't exist any longer, and he did not deem the new superintendent to be someone that he, in his opinion, in his discretion, that there was not a showing of likelihood of future retaliation.
Well, who's the new superintendent?
I beg your pardon?
The new superintendent.
Oh, well, new.
You mean Carraway?
Carraway, yes.
Yeah, but Carraway is supposedly the one who doesn't think Miles isn't loyal to him.
Well, and that gets back to the question of whether he should have promoted Miles. And that is, it's you know, someone who's in the state police to be promoted to captain, even if you're a lieutenant, is something that is not a matter of entitlement, but certainly from first sergeant to captain is even less a matter of entitlement. And so for the superintendent to say, well, I don't believe this person is going to be loyal to me, I'm not going to promote him from first sergeant to captain, it's a stretch to say that that's discrimination, that has to be that there has to be an injunction, therefore, against future discrimination.
Except that the basis for Carraway's concern was the fact that Miles complained about discrimination. And certainly he gave an indication that he was never going to consider him probably for promotion.
Well, that was one of the factors. Carraway did testify about other factors in general. He had known Miles for years. And when it comes to putting him in a position of authority such as captain, it's something a superintendent properly can do to just say, you know, this person is not going to support me, this person is not going to be a good captain for me, and that doesn't mean it's based on racial animus or based on the fact that Miles had complained.
Well, you mentioned when you got up here that, and I noticed I hadn't seen that, but maybe it was, that Miles didn't support Carraway for superintendent.
Yes, Carraway had testified about that at one of the hearings on equitable relief.
So he's for somebody else or whatever, maybe doesn't like Carraway or doesn't think Carraway should be the superintendent, and that touches on loyalty, because I have the same curiosity as that Judge Williams does. What is this lack of loyalty encompass? I can understand if somebody says he shouldn't be president or something else, you're not going to take him under your wing. On the other hand, if because he complained, he says, oh, I'll get even with him, I'll just never promote him. There's two different reasons about loyalty here.
It's true. And this was evidence that the jury would have considered. And the jury could have based its decision on, well, you know, Carraway just had it in for this guy and didn't promote him. But the jury did have the alternate basis of Superintendent Jennings' decision to put him in a dead-end job. It's speculation. And then within, just why doesn't somebody appoint somebody to captain? I would say that's there are a lot of intangibles there. I think somebody has to go with who they can trust and who they are going to be able to work with. And it's hard to quantify that in a list of factors. And so, as a matter of discretion, Carraway wasn't required to promote Miles, and as a matter of discretion, the district court properly denied him his request for promotion. And considering the $50,000 jury award, the district court properly found that he was made whole through his action, his being reassigned to a position with supervisory authority, the $50,000 jury award. Also, he ended up receiving more than $60,000 in attorney fees. So the district court properly denied the equitable relief request.
But you agree that the fact that he received attorney's fees, I mean, that's really irrelevant to the question of what his future might be at the state police. I mean, these other victories that he received doesn't really address the question of whether or not he could be promoted in the future.
That's true, and that was a question for the district court. Should there be an injunction against future discrimination, and in its discretion, the district court held that its finding was that the complaint of retaliation occurred in the past, and that is something entitled to deference, as is the decision not to order an injunction, and also the posting of notices regarding specific timelines for filing complaints. The existing notices do comply with the law, and they do generally inform employees that they do have rights to file formal complaints if they believe they're being discriminated against.
What was Carraway's testimony as far as the willingness or not willingness to promote him, I guess?
Well, the question always was, why aren't you promoting him to captain? And I don't believe he ever testified that he would never promote him to lieutenant, for example. If there was a lieutenant position and Miles were qualified, I don't think there's anything in the record suggesting that Miles would not be considered like anyone else who is qualified.
So we have just this nebulous term of loyalty, which could mean lots of things.
Well, and again, I would argue that the whole question of discretionary appointments to a high rank in the Indiana paramilitary organization, where you know, like in the Army, you know, you need officers who are going to do what you want them to do. And so this is something where the person in charge has to go with their instincts about what these people are like. And
of course, in the military, you get transferred laterally all the time, go into new units and everything else. This is the only act. So well, is he hitting a ceiling as long as Carraway is the superintendent? And if so, is it within... is it a proper reason that he's not getting promoted? Which could be, I would say, because he, I'll say, campaigned against Carraway for superintendent. Or it could be that it's because he reacted to discrimination differently than Carraway would like to see it done and didn't want that kind of an attitude.
Well, I'll
which
say
may be a retaliation.
The... as far as the incident at the command meeting, at that time, Carraway was only a major. It's not like he was the superintendent and should have done something right then. He was the target of that remark. According to Miles, Carraway grossly underreacted, and arguably, Carraway believes that Miles overreacted. And so, over time, Miles has decided, well, that's still bothering Carraway, and that's why he won't promote me. As far as the record is concerned, of 1,300 state troopers, only 42 are first sergeants. It's not like being a first sergeant is anything minor. And I don't believe the record does support a finding that Miles will never be a lieutenant or never have any opportunity to advance.
I understand you're out of your time, but I guess I'm just curious why there was an objection to including time limits in the posted policy in terms of, you know, the timing of EEOC complaints and the problem of time running, because I don't think that's in the stated policy.
The timelines are not in the stated policy, and for example, the EEOC policy, I think is just a basic... Oh, I thought I had it with me. Poster that simply, here it is, you know, that just, you know, lists the different kinds of discrimination and has an 800 number. And yes, the state police could add a timeline. However, I think it's the Schrader case that I cited, that's all that's really required. Put them on general notice. The state police on its own could add those timelines, but the failure to do that is not improper, at least under the appropriate relief standard of the federal statute.
And that certainly is a discretionary call the state could make, and I guess I don't understand what the objection was to not including it. I understand there's case law that says you don't have to, but I don't understand why it wouldn't be included.
I'm not sure either, and I don't know if it was a matter of cost, and I think that...
add a line, would be that expensive? The new brochures that come out, the law changes from time to time. So, would the state consider in the new brochures putting the time limit in?
As a practical matter, that would make sense. As a legal matter, the district court was right in saying they don't have to.
Well, I think that would be a good message for you to take back to the state.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Mr. Dart?
The notice that was shown to you by the state is the standard notice required by law for all employers. It is not an injunctive relief notice after a jury verdict finding that there is retaliation by the employer. Obviously, an injunctive relief notice would not be what's already required by law. It would address these issues that you have mentioned. The state argued before you, Caraway believes Miles overreacted. And I think that probably sums up the fact, and I have told you in my opening argument that all of the chain of command agreed that Mr. Miles was correct in reporting this terribly racist remark comparing a black major to the foreskin of a white major. So, but the state is correct that Caraway named this as the only thing that he ever questioned Miles' loyalty for, and said that Caraway thought.
So there isn't some issue about not supporting him for superintendent?
Not other than Mr. Miles complaining about race discrimination and retaliation. There's nothing else.
Well, didn't Mr. Miles say that Caraway isn't tough enough on this and shouldn't be superintendent?
No. As a matter of fact, the evidence in the record says that Caraway didn't even talk to Miles about that, but that Caraway heard this from others unknown, unspecified, rumor, nothing that we could even, even get into. So there was nothing other than the complaints of race discrimination and retaliation that Bob Miles made, that Mr. Caraway said that Caraway thought Bob Miles carried on for years. So the situation here is a situation not where we're starting just without any verdict. But we're attempting to implement a verdict in favor of the plaintiff. The all-white jury, having found that Mr. Miles was retaliated against, and implementing that. So when the state says the superintendent has discretion, well, he may have discretion before he's found to have violated the law. But once there's a verdict of retaliation, then we have to implement that verdict. And then the state said, well, it may have been the first superintendent, not the second superintendent. Well, the second superintendent, Caraway, is the one who has made all of these admissions about how he stopped any consideration of doing anything for Mr. Miles after he received a motion for injunctive relief, which he's not supposed to do. He's not supposed to stop relief for Miles just because Miles has asked the court to order relief.
I have one question in terms of us trying to speculate on as to the basis for the jury verdict. You know, it was just a general verdict form that the jury signed. Would having specific questions or interrogatories with respect to the verdict have been helpful?
The plaintiff always reversed the general verdict. The defendant did not make any request for a special verdict, did not make any request to...
Well, and here the general verdict actually worked to your benefit, and when you look at the numbers, because when you plot out the back pay amount that's calculated, as the court said, the total amount, it seems to be more.
The jury entered a verdict for... on evidence of $22,000 for back pay. The court calculated it as $14,000, but the evidence was $22,000. It really doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. And then the remainder was emotional distress damages. The jury never even was given the issue of front pay because no one knew what the court would decide. And no one knew if the defendant would oppose promotion. The court, in its order, then months after the jury verdict, said, well, I'm not going to promote him, not going to give him front pay. So there was no possible way, either in law or in fact or practically, for the jury to award front pay. So the court agreed that he's entitled to front pay, but the court then tried to wipe out all emotional distress damages, or virtually all of it, which the jury awarded, which the court can't do. The court has to implement the jury verdict and provide full relief. And the court didn't even provide relief past the retirement.
Okay, thanks very much. That case will be taken under advisement.